you cared about dearly. You raised your hand. This is the interactive sermon. So, who thinks they have the best story of losing something and finding it again? Real quick. You can tell it like in a minute or so. See a hand right here. Stand up and just say it loudly. With the blue lanyard. There you go. You lost your wallet. All right. That's a pretty important thing to lose. Where did you find it? Well, that was quick. Someone's got to be able to beat that, though. Who's got a better story than that, you think? It's something you lost. Nobody? Up there? Okay, go ahead. There you go. Terrifying moment. I'll share a story like that later on. But we've all lost something that we've cared about deeply. In fact, we've all lost things that we don't care about either. In fact, most of them end up in church lost and found. So I asked earlier in the week if we had a lost and found. And apparently we do. So I thought we might get some stuff back to their owners today. Maybe not. There's a hat. Anybody recognize this hat? No, nobody. Okay, there's this scarf. It's a beautiful scarf. No one's going to claim it. You might just want to say it's yours. No? Is this your scarf? Oh, there we go. Reunited one. Here, pass it back. Pass it back. Pass it back to Chris. There's these really stylish glasses that I might keep. There's a zebra umbrella that my kids would really like. It looks like a knitting needle cozy of some sort that has a little cat with a knitting ball on it, a poly yarn, no. And someone's really missing this is a USB cable. Yeah, nobody? Okay. Let's see. There's this one I found really interesting. It's a one glove. It has a note on it. It says from 12 to 8. I don't know what year this is, although it was written by Nancy B. So, but a lady called Tuesday, but I didn't have it, and I told her to call again on Wednesday. Ken found the glove. Hopefully she'll call back Wednesday. Unless that was this last week, I'm assuming that there's no chance she's getting this glove back. This was interesting, too. There's a blanket in here. There's a whole bunch of kids' clothes, which is not surprising at all. There is a camera. Oh, and a pink brush. Anybody? Pink brush? Is this someone's pink brush? I saw someone move over here. No? Okay. There is this Olympus camera. I think that it takes like a million megapixel. No, it's film. It's a film camera. I was silly. And I just opened it right up, not even thinking I might ruin someone's pictures, but there's no film in there, so that was okay. Anybody Olympus camera? No? You could probably get $2 for it on eBay or something. Why do you think that no one came for these things? All right. A couple of good answers here. One, didn't know when they lost them. Didn't know where they went. Had no clue where they went. Didn't even know where to begin to look. Some of these things might be dearly loved. Some of them might be heirlooms. But they didn't know where they left it. So they had no idea where to begin. How many of you guys have had that experience before? Yeah. The other answer I heard was, these things aren't of value to the person. They lost it. They thought about it for a few seconds. They thought, oh, maybe it's at the church. They even called the church and said, hey, did you find my glove? And I'll call back on Wednesday. And then they never call back again, right? So it never gets found because it wasn't valuable enough to take their time to look for it. Well, this morning, I think we're going to look at the story of the prodigal son, which I think is poorly named, to find out whether or not God finds us valuable enough to find us. And I think that the answer is, God does. God cares enough about us. God values you so much that he was unwilling to leave any stone unturned to leave you lost in your sin. God desires a relationship with you so much that he was willing to go beyond any reasonable search to find you. So this story is really about three characters. Three characters, two characters that are kind of two sides of the same coin, in my opinion, and then one character who Who is the hero? Let's start with the two characters who are the sides of the same coin. The first is the obvious one. The first is the son who asks for his inheritance ahead of time, right? How many of you know the significance of this in the culture that Jesus lived in? No one? Few people? Let me tell you this. In this culture, to ask for your inheritance ahead of time is to say, I wish you were dead. Because the inheritance was something that you would receive when the patriarch would pass and would give the inheritance to their children, first and foremost to the eldest son, who would receive the bulk of the inheritance, but the other kids would also receive portions of the inheritance too. This purpose of this, as I think I talked about a few weeks ago, was to keep the legacy of their name and all they've built for themselves in the land. It was tied very much to the land and the things that they accumulated for themselves, because the way that they were remembered, the way that they were preserved in the people of God in the land, was to have their stuff passed down. And so for this son to say, give me my inheritance now, it's more than just a simple request. It's more than even just a slap in the face. It was like this son saying, I don't care for you so much. I wish that you were dead so that I could enjoy what you've built right now. What would your response be if your child came to you and did this? Anybody, throw it out. Yeah, forget it. Guess what? You just got written out of the will. You don't get anything anymore. And what does the father do? He gives it to him. He gives it to him. Remember that. Hold on to that, because we're going to get back to that in a little bit. What this shows about the first son is that the son does not care at all about the father. The father is the least of his concerns. He doesn't care. All he cares about is his own fulfillment. The fact that he could take that possessions, those possessions, and he could enjoy it with all of his might. How long did it last them? Not very long. And when he ran out, he found himself in a position far worse off than he would have ever had been if he had stayed in his home. So much so that he, at one point, was serving pigs, something that was a completely unkosher, unclean event in his culture. And he wished he could get down with the pigs and eat their slop, because what they had to eat was better than his own food. And his senses came to him. And he realized, wait a minute, if I were still in my father's house, I would be, if I was just a servant, I would be treated far better than I currently am living. Maybe if I go back and ask for mercy, he'll make me a servant in his house. I won't assume to be a child, a son again. But if I could just be a servant, that would be okay. I'll go back. So he does. After he goes back, we know some of the story there. We just heard it. But the other brother comes in, which I think is the second character of the story, the second side of the same coin. What is the other brother's response? The other brother's response is, when he sees his father receiving with great joy his younger brother, he sees that and he goes to his father and he says, wait a minute, you haven't given me anything. I've been faithful to you. I'm the one who deserves the inheritance when you die. And you have given a giant banquet to this man who dishonored you, wished you were dead, and then took all that you gave him and squandered it away. You've given him a banquet. You've given me nothing. Is it a fair statement? Yeah. Heck yeah. If I was that older brother, I'd be feeling the same way. What are you doing here? In fact, I have a brother who's a little like the other brother. I don't think he listens to my sermons, so that'll be okay. I would say the same thing. I would say, what? I have been faithful. What are you doing? But it reveals something about his heart, too. It reveals that his heart is in the same place as his younger brother. But then his younger brother had the gall to reveal his heart, and this brother hid it. This brother really only cared about what the father could pass on to him, just as much as the younger brother did too. But he was being patient. He was waiting for the mother load of inheritance when his dad died. So imagine the slap in the face of this father, who believed that his son was being faithful and obedient because of his love to him. And instead, the older brother says, "Hey, wait a minute, I want something from you too." As a parent, I think it'd be just as rough to have that response. The problem with both brothers is that both were not caring about their father. We're not caring about the relationship with their father, not caring about representing their father's name well. But both were caring about what they could receive, what they could get from their father for their own benefit. Now, I would love to judge both of these brothers and say how horrible they are and how much that they're ridiculous people, and I wouldn't make those choices. And yet, when I reflect on my own life, I think I've made those choices over and over and over again. I can tell you stories about times as a child or a teenager or as an adult or last week where I've prayed things to God, desiring for him to give to me like he was some kind of magic genie there to give me my requests. So before we go and judge either of these brothers, let's look at our own hearts and think about whether or not we are just like them. And thinking of God as a machine that is here to grant our greatest wishes or to give to us in some way. Or whether or not our hearts are one to desire after the Father and the relationship with him more than anything he could possibly give us. Now, let's go to the third character. The character, I think, is the hero of this story, the Father himself. The Father himself. In order to understand the father's actions, we got to look back at the comment I made about honor cultures. I didn't use that word back then, but when I was talking about the culture of Jesus' time, I was talking about honor cultures. Are there honor cultures around today that you hear of? Sure. All over the world. Every time you hear of some tribe taking a young girl who is accused of adultery and they're going to stone her to death, that is an honor culture. That is somebody that the honor being besmirched is more detrimental than any other thing that could possibly be done. And so honor being besmirched must be punished at the highest level. And so in these cultures, if someone does something to denigrate the honor of someone else that they owe honor to, then they should be punished. And they should be punished most of the time by death. So this son who came to his father and asked him for his inheritance before his dad was dead, he deserved a punishment, probably of death. He deserved a punishment far greater than any of us would probably give. I mean, we think he probably deserves some kind of punishment, but far greater than any of us would even consider. That's what he deserved in that culture. And yet, what does the father do? Gives him the inheritance. Friends, forgiveness started far before this son knew his father forgave him. Forgiveness started far before he came to his senses and came running back to his father, begging to just be a servant in the house. Forgiveness started the moment the son came to the father and asked him for that inheritance. Because the father gave it to him, but he didn't deserve it. Hero of the story, the Father is God in this story. Jesus is telling us about what God the Father in heaven has done for us. So think about this. Before you ever even recognized the need for forgiveness, God sent his Son to this earth to die a horrible death at our hands. Should cause us to pause and think for a second.
needed forgiveness. I was already forgiven. More than that, we get an image of a father. An image of a father who didn't stop day after day looking out for that wayward son. I remember one time about 7 years ago when my oldest daughter was about 2 years old. We lived in a duplex behind the church I was serving at as a youth director. And my wife would occasionally let my daughter come walk with me over to the church. It was a really long commute. It was about 50 feet out my door to my office. And she would let her go with me, and she'd sit with me and play in her office or whatever. It was time for her to spend with her daddy. And I didn't know my wife was going to be sending her after me. And so I left, and my wife thought that I left earlier than she thought. And so she sent Amaris after me to go run. And Amaris didn't know where my office was. She always followed me there, even though it was pretty easy, but she was two. And so she goes wandering off trying to find me. She has no idea. And 15 minutes later, I came home and was asking my wife for something else, and she said, "Where's Amaris?" I said, "What do you mean, where's Amaris?" I didn't take her with me. "No, I sent her after you left." "What do you mean you sent her after me after you left?" "I haven't seen her." "You haven't seen her?" "No, I haven't seen her either." "Where is she?" "I don't know." The next 10 minutes as we looked for her were probably the worst 10 minutes I've ever experienced in my entire life. Those of you who have kids and have lost your kids know the same feeling, right? Absolute terror. Your mind goes to the worst possible scenario every time. She must have gotten picked up by somebody as she was walking the 50 feet over the church. Yeah, something happened to her. She lost in a ditch somewhere. Your mind goes to the worst possible scenario. And what do you care about in that moment? Those parents who have experienced this before, someone shouted out, what do you care about? Care about your child. Why? Why do you care about your child? Because they can give you anything? No, they're a drain on everything you have. It's not because they can give you anything at all. You just care for them so deeply, you would do anything. I can tell you that in that moment, if I had the capability, would have rent heaven and earth. I would have torn it apart to find her. I love her so much. I couldn't imagine anything happening. All those emotions you feel when you hear that story, all those emotions, you remember the time that your son or daughter walked off and you couldn't find them. Think about that. That is what God feels towards you. That is what God thinks about you. And in this story, we see the image of a father who waits faithfully day after day after day until the day that he'll one day see his son who betrayed every bit of his faithfulness and honor to run after him and embrace him and take him back home. In this story, as God is the Father, I am the prodigal. You are the prodigal. If you haven't realized it yet, I pray and I hope that you would know. You are the older brother, and you have stayed faithful your whole life. I hope you would know the Father loves you dearly. The Father wants a relationship with you and seeks after you with everything he has just as much as the son who ran away.